sports yak.
Oh, my heavens!
One host knows sports.
And who's right there?
The other doesn't know sports, but somehow they meet in the middle. Corey Mann.
Get your big butt out of here!
And Indiana Sports Broadcast Hall of Famer.
This one will be relived.
Chuck Freebie.
Forever!
Do you like sports? Because we like sports. Let's talk about sports. It's Sports Yak. Sports Yak. It's Sports Yak.
You hear me okay?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Oh, yeah, man. It's been a wild couple days. I'm in a hotel that I should not be in. Yeah, I'm stuck in Toronto right now because of flights through Chicago. There's just major thunderstorms. So that slowed everything down. So I should be in Kansas City right now, but I'm not.
Ooh.
So tonight's gig is canceled.
Oh.
I hope to get in for tomorrow's gig. So, yeah. I mean, even like look at the coffee I'm drinking this morning. It's not been good. Who gets coffee at Subway?
I mean, that's literally what I thought. It's like, how? I didn't know that they did that.
I found out the hard way. So
now, is that a 6-inch cup or a foot long?
Oh, man.
My guest is Jordan St. Cyr.
What else with Corey Mann on the Studio DNA Podcast Network?
Let's welcome Jordan St. Cyr to the podcast. Hello, my friend. How are you?
Dude, I'm doing great. Thank you for having me.
When you glance at your name on a piece of paper, please tell me that it might take a couple of tries to get it right from some people.
I would hope it would. There's no vowels in my last name. There's no vowels. Like, how do you say this? It's an uncommon name from, you know, where I'm from. So
what have you heard from people that have said it wrong? Do you have a favorite one?
Yeah, Mr. Sticker. That's a good one. Yeah, they'd add vowels, I guess. Mr. Sticer is good. The obvious one is St. Cry, right? Because your eyes are just going to like reverse the C-Y-R to C-R-Y. And then I've just been called some awful names that we won't get into. So,
Jordan, I feel like I learn a lot about people when I ask this question. I've asked it many times, and yeah, you're no different. So who's mom and dad?
Mom and dad, geez, they did not have the easiest of childhoods. My dad grew up without a dad, so he was raised by a single mom. My mom's dad has since passed on, and he was a bit of a workaholic. My mom's mom had MS and eventually passed from that. So they grew up in in different ways, dysfunctional homes. And so for my parents, it was all about family is number one. They wanted to create this amazing family. And honestly, I've asked them the question, like, how did you know what an amazing family was coming from such dysfunction and getting such a different picture of family as to what it is now? Because now they have 4 kids, they've got a ton of grandkids, and they have this beautiful legacy. They've been able to kind of break that generational cycle. And so mom and dad are two people who fought for what they believed would make the world better.
That rub off on you?
Oh, just a little bit. Yeah. Like that's for my wife and I, if you were to ask us what we're about, it's like, we just want to leave the world a better place than we came into it. And same with our kids. We don't want to raise little jerks, you know, or anything like that. We want to raise kids that are for people. And I think the only way you can be for people is to kind of have an idea, at least, that, you know, that we were made from a place of love and that we are loved, you know.
When you're a young lad and you've got those little hands wrapped around that cow udder.
Yes.
Were you thinking, this is the life for me?
Oh, man. How did you know about that? Huh?
I know things.
My first job was milking cows for a local farmer. It was the single worst job I've ever had in my life because you have to do 2 shifts. One was at like 3 in the morning, and then one was like in the afternoon. So it's like a 15-year-old. Gosh, like, how do you, like, I think I lasted a month. And so, you know, you did have to work the udders a little bit to kind of get them going, and then you could hook up the automated, you know, contraption. But gosh, I don't recommend it. It's you know, it's a special calling. Special calling.
I would say because you didn't like it so much, the great lesson is I'm going to do whatever I can and be really good at it so I never have to do this again.
100%. You know, and for those of you that do this, it is honorable work.
Sure.
It's just we are all made for different things, and that's not for me.
Follow-up question, do you ever turn that udder to the side and give yourself a squirt in the face?
You know, it definitely crossed my mind, but it was never going to happen, man. No, because you know what? It's warm. You know, who likes, you know, warm milk?
But
no,
it's from the tap, brother. It's from the tap.
From the tap. Oh, gosh. Man, that's so gross.
I'm thinking about having a shirt made of a cow, and it says, bypass the glass, because this is from the tap.
Dude, I'd wear that. That's on my roots.
Did I hear through the grapevine you laid floors?
Yeah, I learned from my dad. Grew up doing that. You know what? As a young kid, I used to curse that job because it's just a lot of hard work. You know, learning something and being a part of something as long as I was, you know, in you know, the flooring industry, and yet you want it to be a means to an end, you know, because I'm like, I have this heart for people and I want to play music and be a conduit for that. But as I grew up, you know, I realized what a blessing this having a trade. It taught me so much more than the trade. It taught me how to be humble. It taught me how to work with people, to provide customer service. Gosh, you know, to really, like, you know, even when you're right, you have to kind of humble yourself under the authority of those you are working for and provide the best, you know, quality, you know, not just installation, but person experience for them. So yeah, that was a wild ride.
You dabbled in poetry and music at a young age. What's a young Jordan St. Cyr poem sound like? And do you still have any of them?
I do somewhere. I've actually kept all those. They're like tucked away and nobody will ever see them because let's get serious. I was a very hopeless romantic, you know, growing up. I was super shy, but I also had this deep, you know, affinity for the things and the nature of God. And I don't know, I was that weird kid that, you know, went to church on my own at 12 years old and just had this pull, this draw. So these poems and these songs were all about just drawing close to God and his character and making me the person he wanted me to be.
Were you reading other pieces of poetry that you would model after, or was it the, I love God, he is my rod, and, you know, I will dig sod. What did you see that you went, okay, I want to do this?
You know, I think a lot of it was my heart resonating with Christian music, to be honest. We didn't have a Christian music station in my town growing up. So, you know, buying CDs from our church was kind of my way into that. Both my brothers were very musical, but they loved listening to the rock station. And so that was great. And I had a season playing rock music, but it was this message in Christian music that resonated so deeply that I didn't really read poetry. I read a lot of Christian lyrics, but honestly, I think it was less of knowing what this was. Like, I wasn't going after a craft. It was more like just whatever's inside came out. And it wasn't good, but it didn't have to be, because it wasn't about being good or bad. It was like, this is my heart at 14 years old.
Walk me into the church store. What CD are you grabbing and buying with your own money for the first time, or just some of the music you were listening to? What did you have to purchase?
Oh gosh, yeah. Jars of Clay, Untitled, you know, that first record was everything, because not only was it so impactful, kind of like in a, you know, that God connection, like, you know, love song for a savior. I was able to, you know, that hopeless romantic in me just connected with that song. It also bridged the gap between me and my brothers, where it was just good. You know, you didn't have to put it in a category, and we just burnt out like three copies of it because we were all listening to it. And so that's what I loved. You know, that was a huge gift. Other than that, it was, you know, the usual suspects, you know, Jesus Freak was huge. Take Me to Your Leader, Newsboys. It was just so iconic at that time.
You said the poetry was really bad when you were younger. Did someone pull you aside and go, you're on to something here? Like, what gave you the spark to go, I think I can actually do this?
Yeah, it wasn't then. My dad was very gracious to kind of support me as a piano player and guitar player. So I would eventually take those poems and create more, you know, of a lyric and a melody. And because I didn't play guitar or piano then, he kind of supported me in that. And we wrote a few songs together out of those poems. And I just saw the way that words and melody could the way it reached me, I thought, oh, maybe I could do the same thing and reach people, you know, with that. So it was really in my youth group where we had no one interested in music or leading. Like, this is the common story, right? I grew up in a small town of 1,200 people. So in our one church, there was maybe, you know, 15, you know, youth. And so somebody had to play the guitar and sing, and that was me. And I'm so grateful for that because it just kind of pushed me into an area that I didn't know existed of playing the guitar and leading worship.
That little small town you were raised in, you and I get to go there for one day. What do we do and where do we eat?
Okay, we put on our shorts and we take the kids to the splash pad. We're gonna get a little wet. It's gonna be great because it's gonna be awkward because two grown men are jumping around with the kids. Man, we're gonna take our go-kart out for a spin behind our house. Our new high school and new rec center just put in this amazing go-kart track. It's just, I don't know why they did that, but that's what we use it for. And then I guess we'll go to the local tavern for a great burger and fries.
Name of the tavern?
Hespler's Tavern. Yeah, man.
Speaking of names, this is my, I don't know if any of my podcast listeners get a kick out of this. This is one of my favorite things to ask. You're in a rock band with your brothers. I'm going to need the name of that band.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Well, we had two names. I'll give you two names. They're both terrible. Yes. Okay. So the first incarnation of our band, we were called Lady Venom.
Yes, Lady Venom.
We love like Stone Temple Pilots and Velvet Revolver and like just that LA rock party vibe. And it was so funny because I was like this worship leader church kid fronting this like rock band. And I always just wanted to be a light. I just wanted to be the guy that, you know, just was a light wherever I was. Because I was like headlining rock shows in the bar at 1 a.m. And then I was leading worship the next morning, you know, Sunday service. And here's my amazing parents. They're at that show. And then they're at Sunday morning. You know what I mean?
Because someone
and
I'm like, had to drive you.
Somebody, yeah, exactly. Oh, my gosh. And so I love that because I think like that's just the person I want to be. That's the person I think people need us to be. Okay, so the second band name was Red Riot.
Red Riot.
Red Riot. And
did you have to drop Lady Venom because it was a comic book name, or it was just like you evolved?
I don't know that I want to get into that. You know, you have such like huge expectations on yourself as young people, and you just think you're going to destroy the world with your music. And you know, we thought we were doing so much, but we just weren't, and we were staying pretty local. It just, you know, we had 6 great years, and two of my brothers were in that band, and if anything that came out of that was that, you know, we became friends, because early on there was so much tension and gosh, a lot of family drama, but we got over it and we grew up, and that was the gift God gave us for that season.
Is there a Canadian version of YouTube? Because I want to find me some Lady Venom and Red Riot. Gosh.
No, man, I think it's all on the old MySpace, so thank God for that.
You have YWAM in your background. Tell me about that experience.
Yeah, you know, coming out of high school, I just I just always had this missional sense in my heart that I needed to get out. Partly that's the small town thing. I got to get out. And so growing up in our church, we had, you know, a handful of people that would always come back from YWAM and share their stories. And I just remember it just being so inspiring. And I knew at 16 years old, that's what I'm doing. I'm gonna serve with YWAM, and I'm gonna, you know, do my part, whatever that meant. So I went to discipleship training school in Montana, and we did our mission in New York City. You know, that again was not my plan. I was like, I'm gonna go to China or Bolivia. You know, you have this grand idea, and I just knew as soon as we had the option of going to New York City and just to serve people that were, I don't know, it just felt so immediate for me to say yes. And so we served at Ground Zero. We served food to firefighters and police officers and cleanup crew. And then that was 1 week. And so we did the shift from 11 p.m. to 7 a.m. And then we did a shift at the morgue. And so the morgue was literally a parking lot full of semi-trucks.
Is this is this in 2001?
This is short 2002.
Wow. Okay.
Early 2002.
Wow.
And it was this such a devastating time, yet such a sacred, and like everybody was such on the same page. You know, like we were all here for one purpose, to serve, you know, this organization and this team of, you know, people just doing their best to clean up. It was wild. When we got to the morgue station, it was just such a sacred place. You know, you do not make comments. You don't joke. You are there to be quiet, serve food, and that's it. And that's all we did. We learned a lot.
Jordan, can you pinpoint that moment in your faith walk where the light switch went on? You're like, I want to sing about this guy the rest of my life.
I would say there's probably two moments. I remember being 12 years old, lying in bed, and just praying for the wisdom of God in my life. And I don't know why, but I knew that, you know, being I'd say a fierce competitor in most things, you know, knowing, you know, reading the word and knowing that the wisdom of God, I think, on this earth is like, it's the top. You know, you're not getting better than that. And I just remember praying that prayer, like, God, if I receive anything in this life, just give me your wisdom. And that was just a defining moment for me and my character, knowing that his name would have to be, you know, first and foremost in my life. Fast forward to, I'd say, 5 or 6 years ago, and I got to the point in my career, I was done with a bar band. I had put out 2 singer-songwriter albums at this point that were, they had like faith leanings, you know, but weren't like I'm a pretty black and white guy when it comes to what I believe. And so I just got to this point where, you know, God said to me, like, Jordan, you've been at this for so long with one foot in. Imagine what we could do with both feet. And I got to the point where the name of Jesus was the one thing that I did need to sing. So if everything else fell away, right, it just got to that point. I'm like, okay, I'm going all in. I'm going to sing what I truly believe and not try and mask it or hide it, you know, kind of like I did in the band. You know, you're not going to get up in the bar and, you know, sing necessarily Jesus songs. You might get kicked out. But for me and the way God made me, I need to sing this one name. It's just who I am and what I need to be about.
I remember how you told me that life may not be easy, and everything that I need, you've already given me. I remember how you told me I can trust you completely. So why am I doubting when you prove that you'd fight for me? You've walked me through fire. Me, you're free.
When I reflect on the spring break of 2021, it's the first time my family traveled in a long while. We were in Destin, Florida. It was a beach vacation. But anytime we were in the car, we were listening to Christian radio. And that whole week will be Fires by Jordan St. Cyr as the song that bubbles up. Down there, I heard that song so many times. I'm so proud of you, pal. How big of an impact was that song on you?
Oh, my gosh. On me, like, take the success away and all the radio and all of that. And it breaks down to this gift that God has given us with music. And you pair that with words and what it can do for your soul. And it can take you out and lead you out of some of the darkest times of your life. You know, as many know, you know, my youngest daughter was born with a brain condition. And so this song was written 6 months before this happened. And so it was based on a different story of a man's struggle getting out of his fire. And here I found myself and my wife, and we were in the depth of ours. And so, you know, you take the success away from the song. This song was like God's gift to us to minister to our souls. And so I said, you were faithful before. Well, I've got to stand on this truth now and say, you are faithful now.
Give me a quick update. How is that precious little child of yours?
Man, she's doing so good. We were back in the hospital about, I want to say a month and a half ago with another, you know, bout of seizures. And so she had three or four of them. She was in all week, and that it's always rough. It's a debilitating disease that she has, and it will continue to get, you know, worse. But when she bounces back from their seizures, it's like she doesn't have anything. And so you take those moments, which are more than moments, you just take those and you just say, thank God for this. We'll handle tomorrow. And, you know, I always say my kids they're like grounding rods, right? You know, as adults, we want to live for tomorrow and plan and dream, and that's all well and fine. But our kids are like, Dad, come play with me now. Dad, come jump on the trampoline. Dad, come do this. And I think that's where God made us for today. And so Emery is her name, and that's what she does. You know, the days that we get that are great, man, thank you, God.
I hope you know I've been a fan for a little while, and my proof of that is I'm looking up in our music library, and I see a little song called Victory sitting in there. How about that?
Man, I can't believe that. So, yeah, we had... Dude, I didn't know what I was doing, and I had this. I still don't. We had a batch of songs that I did down in Nashville, and Victory was one that kind of made its way on radio a little bit, and you guys picked it up. And I remember kind of getting that email, you know, and I was just floored. You know, this little, you know, kid from Canada, middle of nowhere, and we're being played in Indiana. So, dude, thank you.
A heart of gratitude to my guest, Jordan St. Cyr, manager Rebecca Jones. And as always, thanks for listening.
What else with Corey Mann on the Studio DNA Podcast Network? Leave some feedback, write a review, hit the subscribe button so you never miss a new episode. What else with Corey Mann on the Studio DNA Podcast Network?